Hey, quick announcement before we jump in. I'm looking to hire a part-time research and content assistant here at eCommerce Fuel, someone to help with our State of the Merchant Report, the blog, the podcast, do some deep research, and a lot more. Be working closely with me. It's a fully remote role, completely flexible schedule, and you get a plug into our community of 7 to 8-figure store owners. So if that sounds interesting, or you know someone who might be a great fit, you can learn more at ecommercefuel.com/content-hire. And the deadline to apply is end of day, November 21st. Thanks so much. The eCommerce Fuel podcast is sponsored by Klaviyo. If you're working around the clock to build your e-commerce business, you need an e-commerce specific marketing platform that works just as hard as you do. That means you need Klaviyo. With Klaviyo, you'll delight customers and drive revenue at the same time with personalized email and SMS marketing campaigns that you can design and send in minutes without an IT degree. It's by far the most popular email marketing tool in our private community of 7 and 8-figure e-commerce store owners because it's got incredibly advanced and powerful segmentation features that help you make more money. To get started for free and to learn more, check them out at klaviyo.com/ECF. That's klaviyo.com/ECF. The eCommerce Fuel podcast is brought to you by One Click Upsell, the most popular, largest upsell app in the Shopify marketplace, trusted by over 11,000 users, over 1,900 of those big spending Shopify Plus stores, and they've generated over $200 million in revenue for the merchants that use them. And you may be thinking, oh, hey, Andrew, I've heard of One Click Upsell. I know these guys, but do you really? Do you know what they've rolled out recently? They've got some cool new stuff for their pre-purchase and their post-purchase upsells. You can now select from multiple different offers to present your customers. So instead of having them just have to pick from one single thing, you can give them the option to pick from multiple upsells, which helps and has proven to increase the number of people who actually take you up on those upsells. So if you're not using upsells in your store, it's an amazingly easy, fast way to increase your average order value and your revenues. So check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the eCommerce Fuel podcast, the show dedicated to helping 7 and 8-figure e-commerce brands build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, I'm joined by Darnell Jackson of VIPHaircare.com. And Darnell's got a really interesting story. Grew up without access to a lot of resources. I had a really crazy kind of adolescence as we dive into some really interesting, unique entrepreneurial pursuits. And yeah, and despite all of that, managed to build VIP Hair Care along with his wife into a really cool business. And so, yeah, I wanted to have him on the show just to learn more about him and his journey. I think it's a really interesting, fascinating one, and it's really cool what he has done. So yeah, a lot of respect to him for sharing it. It's really open and transparent. Yeah, I hope you find some value here and enjoy our discussion as well. So let's go ahead and jump in. Darnell, welcome to the show. So glad to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you've been great. Been at UCF for about a year now, and just read about your story. I think you shared it in your kind of new member case study. One of the things we do in the forums for people who aren't members is all new members are required to share kind of a new member case study. Could be something about their story or a marketing tactic or just something that can add value to the community, because one of our big values is reciprocity, and it's a great way to have members have some buy-in and also add value to the existing members. Anyway, loved your case study. It's been cool watching your journey, and I think you've got a really cool story. So yeah, man, excited to have you here. Maybe we can start off with, can you talk a little bit about your background? Like how did you grow up? What was your story before you got into e-commerce?
I'm born and raised in New Orleans, Louisiana. Come from, I guess, you know, somewhat of a non-traditional background for a founder. Kind of poor, not super poor, but, you know, from a pretty basic family as far as money's concerned. No one in my family ever really had any money. Well, no one on my mother's side. Grew up in a, you know, pretty basic neighborhood. I like to tell people that I think I was an entrepreneur before I knew what an entrepreneur was, definitely before I knew how to spell it. My first business was in the 7th grade. So I was kind of the guy in school who could always draw. So that's what I did. So my first business was selling drawings and drawing on book sacks and clothing, things of that nature. But when I think about it, it actually goes back further than that. And I didn't find this out. I didn't realize this until later. But my grandmother on my father's side was actually an entrepreneur and a pretty big deal in the small town that she was from. My dad's from a small town called Itabena, Mississippi. My mom's from Greenwood, which is a slightly larger city outside, not too far from Itabena. But my grandmother, they called her the Duchess in her city. She owned like a few businesses, like a corner store, a laundromat, apartment building. So as a kid, I didn't realize what that meant. I liked going to her store and being able to, take what I want and not have to pay for it. So I just remember going in there and, getting all the popsicles, all the candy I wanted, and just and people treating her with a certain level of respect.
Your grandma had the store, and she also was a landlord, and she had tenants, and she had a bunch of different businesses.
Yeah, she had a bunch of different businesses. Correct. Like I said, as a kid, you don't realize the importance of that. So fast forward to when I was nine, and I only saw her in the summer, right? So my mom moved to New Orleans. That's where I live. But in the summer, I go visit my dad and my grandmother. So I only got a glimpse of, that life. So fast forward, when I was in the sixth grade, she passed away from lung cancer. I went up there. I was the first person in my life that died. And she was, she was really important to me. But you know how people go to the person's house after a funeral and kind of like go through their things and take what's important to them. So one of the things I took that I remember, clear as day, was a records book. And she had only used like the first couple of pages in it, but it was like a bookkeeping type of book. So I remember taking that and going to the seventh grade and starting my drawing business. So I had the records book, and I used to like extend credit to people. So like, if a drawing costs $5, you pay me $1 a week until it's paid off, stuff like that. So I keep records of like who owed me money, the orders that they put in, how long it took me to do it, yada, yada, that kind of thing.
You were selling drawings on credit to people in the seventh grade? That's amazing.
Right. Yeah.
These must have been some pretty good drawings for people to go.
I was probably the best artist in the school. So that was my talent. But, I also had that entrepreneurial mindset. But it was also because, like I said, we didn't have a lot of money and I wanted certain things. And, my mom didn't always have the money for it, or it'd be something that she just didn't agree with that I should have. So that kind of put me on this road of like, well, I'm going to make my own money. You can't tell me what to buy with my own money.
And what was the, because obviously, like at some point stuff changed for you and you got out of, I think you had, was there kind of a, how did you go from, the selling drugs and the shoplifting and all the illicit stuff into like pivoting into business? Because like right now you run, VIP hair care. It's a modern, great, fantastic business. And what was the pivot point for you where you kind of changed? How did you get out of that world? Was there a point where you just stuff got really bad, or do you have a mentor that pulled you out of that? Or do you just kind of looked around one day and said like, what am I doing? Like how did that happen?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's a mixture of all of that. And I'll try to, I'll try to summarize it. It's a long story, but I'll try to make it as short as possible. So yeah, I was always kind of like one foot in and one foot out. So I was never like, oh, I'm going all in the streets. I'm, robbing people and, doing a lot of the stuff that friends of mine were doing. It was always, okay, yeah, I'm doing this to make some money, but I'm also trying to start this business or get this off the ground. So after high school, I actually went to college on a partial art scholarship for a year. But, college wasn't really for me. I realized that. So I left. While I was in college, I met these guys who, who rapped or whatever, and they kind of convinced me to start rapping. So that was another talent I had. And just, side note, like, I tell people all the time, because everybody asks me, how you talented at so many things? I tell them it's kind of a gift and a curse, because if I had it all to do over, I would pick one talent and focus all my energy on that, because being talented in multiple aspects and just multiple things tends to pull you in different directions because you're always like, I could be doing this. Let me try this or let me try that. So that's kind of been, I don't want to call it a flaw, but it's kind of been something that's worked against me in certain aspects, in certain instances. But anyway, get back to what I was saying. So I got into rapping, still, you know, doing, you know, what I was doing in the streets. That I started working with this local record label, right? So they needed a website. The guy that was doing their website, I didn't like it. It sucked. This was years ago, right? Websites can only be built like on Dreamweaver unless you knew like real HTML, right? So
yeah,
they needed a website. I didn't like the one that the people were doing. So I just got, you know, this one of those computers, the big IMAX with the that looked like an egg. And I just started doing pirated software. So I found some pirated software. I downloaded the whole Adobe suite and I taught myself Dreamweaver and Photoshop, right? So then I used that to create all of the record labels, album covers, and create the website. The owner of the record label knew this other guy who had just started a business here in New Orleans, and they were looking for a web developer, right? So he recommended me for that job. So I took that job because that was another way to make money, right? So I took that, and that guy kind of became my mentor in business. His name is Anthony Patton. He started a web entertainment website in New Orleans called NewOrleansBlack.com. So it was focused on events and, you know, anything around black culture in New Orleans. So I worked for him off and on for a few years, until finally I left his company to start my own independent marketing firm, basically just me freelancing. And that was like my first taste of like real business, like, you know what I'm saying, working inside of a small business and just seeing how it operated. Like we had different contracts with the city and different clients. You know, I mean, it was a cool experience. And I'll forever be grateful to him for that. But then, so that turned into, like I said, me starting my own business, my own marketing company. But at the same time, my wife was starting her business, which was selling hair extensions. So I helped her with that, with the graphic design for that, and ended up helping with the website for that. And that business was called VIP Luxury Hair.
And before we get, because I want to go deep on that business too, but before we do, what, I mean, you got a really amazing story. You know, grew up poor, had a kind of some definitely challenges growing up in your high school years. What do people like, I mean, it's a very pull yourself up from the bootstrap story, and you've done really well. What do people who haven't had kind of, you know, who didn't start where you did, didn't have the upbringing or background, would they not understand about how hard it is to pull yourself out of a situation like that? Like for someone who's, you know, just, you know, relatively affluent and living in Illinois and doesn't have any understanding of that background, like what do people not understand about that world and that process and trying to, you know, better your life when you're in a situation like that?
I would say the biggest thing would probably be maybe they don't realize how close to, you know what I'm saying, to poverty you can be when you're in that zone, right? So it's like most of the people around you are also living paycheck to paycheck. Like you'll hear politicians say, you know, a certain segment of society is like one tragedy away from poverty, right? So anything medical happens, or, you know what I'm saying, just losing your job, or, you know what I'm saying, anything, any of those events can push you into a real bad situation. And so when you're in that zone, you're constantly aware of that. So you're constantly having to mitigate risk. You know what I'm saying? Everybody can't always say, well, I'm gonna start a business. Oh, look at that, you know, that brick and mortar for rent right there. Let me go put a deposit down on that space because I have an idea that I want to hash out and I want to try. But at the same time, you know, if that doesn't go right, you're done. Like, you know what I'm saying? You don't have those backup finances. You don't have, you know, a lot of times we don't have that family member that can cut you a check or invest in your business from the jump. Like, I say this sometimes too, like I watch Shark Tank, but I watched Shark Tank for years, all the time, right? And it just always, me and my wife always trip out because it amazes us how many times they'll ask the question, so, you know, how did you get started? Or how much money did you have invested into it? And it amazes us how many people can say, oh yeah, we did a friends and family round and raised $100,000. Like I can't even fathom that. You know what I'm saying? Like there's nobody in my family that has $100,000 to you know, or $20,000 that they can spare, you know what I'm saying, to do something like that. So a lot of times with black businesses, you'll hear this is completely bootstrapped from the ground up. A lot of times they get lucky with just like a product that's a hit, or you know what I'm saying, goes viral on social media or something like that. And that can be a big boost, a big help. But you know what I'm saying, like a lot of other founders have other resources to fall back on, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, that safety net or like the capital of friends and family is a huge.
And it also makes you a lot less risk averse, you know what I'm saying? Because you know you'll be okay regardless.
Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick aside. And you obviously love e-commerce. You're interested in that. And so I wanted to make sure you're aware of the private community we have at E-Commerce Fuel for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brand owners. And it's something we've been building for close to a decade now with over 1,100 members across the globe. And our secret sauce, like the name implies, is that everyone inside has deep experience doing this with an owner mindset. And so what does that mean? It means you get, when you log into our form, you get fast, on-point answers to your most pressing questions, regardless of whether that's you're negotiating a new lease for a warehouse, or maybe you're negotiating with UPS or USPS or FedEx about shipping rates or pickup times, or potentially you're just looking to find a great outsourcer, or wondering if you can even outsource your content. Is that something anyone has had success with? You can tap into this huge knowledge and brain trust across the globe and get answers within hours, sometimes even minutes. So it's an incredibly active form with experienced people. You get to plug into an amazing network worldwide. A lot of our members, when they travel, if they touch down in Dallas or Sydney or London or Bozeman, Montana, or whatever it is, oftentimes they'll reach out to other ECF members. You know, obviously a little harder to do potentially right now, but and see if, you know, they want to get together for a beer to connect and oftentimes get to know a new friend. So it's an amazing network, as well as invites to our member-only events like ECF Live, which is our annual summit gathering for about 200 people. And then finally, the intelligence in our community just that's shared helps you avoid making really costly hiring and software mistakes. So our members write reviews on what they're using, their software tools, their agencies, completely unbiased, completely from their own experience. And so you can avoid making that, you know, hiring that agency that's an absolute nightmare, but you don't know about it. Or you can hone in on the one that actually does a really good job. It saves you a ton of time and money from bad hiring and software decisions. So if any of this sounds interesting, head on over to ecommercefuel.com and you can learn more about the community, what's included, and apply for membership as well. All right, let's go ahead and jump back in to the discussion. So let's fast forward back again. So I don't know if you met your wife or you were married, but she's got the VIP, you know, hair extensions business. And you kind of came in and you kind of wrestled with getting into that business, right? Like you were kind of, because I think there was a quote I pulled from your case study was, I think ultimately you said, I decided to block out the voices and challenge the conventional wisdom about passion and business. I'm not all passionate about hair, but I do love the hustle. Talk a little bit about like what that was like, because a big part of your journey, it sounds like, was this idea that you really want to do something you're passionate about, but obviously hair extensions, shockingly, wasn't it for you, but you kind of dove in and took that on and moved the business forward. What was that? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, you know, and it's kind of crazy because, like I said, I tried my hand at so many different things. I mean, I've done a lot. I haven't even listed half of the things I've tried, right? But none of it ever like took off, right? So, like I said, at this point I'm it's right before Hurricane Katrina, or maybe it was right after. I can't remember. I think it was right after. But I had my my marketing company, and I'm getting along. I'm doing okay, but I'm seeing her hair extension business kind of taking off, because we were one of the first people to offer that in our area. So I'm watching that take off. But at the same time, she's like, come on, I need your help. Come on in, we can do this. You don't worry about the other thing. Oh, I also started an entertainment website, kind of mirroring the other one I worked for, but it wasn't really pulling in the dollars that I needed it to. So she's like, come, she was trying to get me to come in for a while. But I, like I said, I'm a street guy. full of machismo. You know what I mean? I'm telling my man's man. I'm like,
you don't want to be selling hair extensions.
Right. I can't see myself. People asking me, what are you doing now? And I'd be like, oh, I'm selling hair. You know, I'm just getting to that mind frame. But, you know, at some point I was just like, you know, you're right. You know, if this is the biggest opportunity on the table for us, it behooves me to, you know what I'm saying, get involved and ensure the success of that business. If that's what, you know what I'm saying, if that's what, where the numbers are pointing. So, you know, reluctantly, I did jump in and helped out with operations because it was getting too big for her to manage. She was still doing hair at the time. You know, we had our family. It was just, you know, it was a bit much. So we teamed up on that. It went well for a while, but, you know, that market kind of got saturated. I think because the barrier of entry was lowered a lot with Alibaba and, you know what I'm saying, sites like that coming on the scene. So, and I really thought it would, you know, happened a lot sooner, but it eventually did what I thought, because, you know, so many people just had that access to overseas manufacturers and things of that nature.
Yeah, and were you getting all your product, the hair extensions? Were you getting them kind of foreign from Asia, or were you how were you sourcing all that stuff?
Right, mainly from China and India.
And the hair extensions are, I don't know this industry barely at all, but they're all real hair, right? Like, it's so people that grow them, and then are there both? Like, can you get artificial hair and then the real hair, and the real hair is more expensive? And how does that work?
Right. Yeah. No. Yeah. We dealt with real hair. They call it virgin hair, right? So it's supposed to be unprocessed. So it's three levels, right? It's synthetic hair, then there's human hair that's been processed to be a certain texture. Then there's the virgin hair, which is supposed to be, you know, just lightly processed, just to form like certain wave patterns or whatever. So that's what we dealt with, and that's what was new about it. So hair extensions have been around forever, but people mainly wore synthetic hair extensions. And then, but, like, you know, with access and, you know, with the world opening up and having access to these different factories, because even the virgin hair, the raw hair, had been around for a while, but it was only available to like certain people, right? And it was a huge barrier to entry for that. Like, you had to actually go to China, talk to a vendor, work out a deal, that type of thing, bring the hair back. But with, you know, with things changing, we were able to get in on that wave when it first kind of started. But again, by us not having that capital or that, you know what I'm saying, the access to those resources, other companies and other people were able to come in and like really blow it up and like really put a lot of money behind it, behind their businesses, and, you know, really take it, really commercialize it and take it to another level. We kind of saw that coming, and that's when we started our pivot into like hair care products, because my wife is also a big like healthy hair advocate. So she was big, you know, out front on that movement. That's another movement going on in the Black community, is just people embracing their natural hair and making it, trying to get it as healthy as possible, stop using so many chemicals and chemical processes. So, you know, she was big on that movement. Her clients pegged her the healthy hair guru. So it only made sense for her to develop her own product line, because people, you know, trusted her and trusted her knowledge and experience with that. And that, you know, and that proved to be a good move for us. And, you know, that took off, and that's kind of where we are now. It's just kind of trying to manage the growth, blow that business up. Or that part of the business up, should I say.
Darnell, so what's next for, when you're looking ahead with the business, what's next for you guys? What are you focused on in terms of, yeah, just next steps and marketing and kind of the future of the business? Where are you guys headed?
So this year we kind of decided to focus a lot heavier on my wife's personal brand as the founder, just because, you know, we kind of realized that it's a lot easier in this climate to grow a personal brand than it is to grow a business. I think people feel more invested in a story, in the story of an individual, more so than a brand. In some cases, you know, especially when you have like that charitable component, then people get really invested in the growth of maybe like a Times or, you know, that type of thing. But for us, I think what we're figuring that growing Ashanti, because she's gotten a lot more press lately, working with a lot more high profile clients. So we figure that by doubling down on growing her brand, that'll translate and trickle down to the actual product line. So that's kind of what we're focused on, growing her brand and working with bigger name influencers going into this quarter and beginning of next year.
Very cool. How are you guys finding those? Are they relationships that your wife previously had, or is she finding on Instagram, or how is she, if you can share, what are maybe a couple of the two or three kind of like key points of how you guys are thinking about influencer marketing right now?
It's kind of dope, two-tiered. So she is making a lot of inroads in her industry and a lot of different connections. And we're talking to people that she's worked with, is currently working with. But then we also, scour the internet for other influencers that fit the brand. We haven't had a lot of, luck in that. It's kind of a new thing for us. We tried the micro-influencer thing because, I was reading for a while that, macro-influencers weren't the way to go. The engagement is falling off, and, it's kind of like the emperor has no clothes type of thing. Flip side of that is the micro-influencer thing. I think you have to have at least one team member solely dedicated to that, because it is a lot of communication with different people and a kind of a lot of hand holding, whereas large influencers kind of have their rates in place. They know, how much they charge for this, how much they charge for that. They're comfortable with contracts and that type of thing. Whereas, the smaller influencers is just, it's a lot of explaining and following up with them. And it was just, we don't have a large team to kind of manage that. I never really had anyone I could, put that responsibility solely upon.
Yeah, just takes a lot more time and logistics to work with lots of smaller ones. Yeah, Darnell, we're kind of getting short on time. Are you up for kind of capping this off, putting a bonnet with our lightning round that we usually do? Is it your game?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. What's one of your fondest memories from your childhood?
That's tough. Fondest memories. I think my first pair of Bally shoes. Bally's were big in New Orleans. That was like the height of our New Orleans fashion was Bally's, Jabots, and Polos. I got my first pair of Bally's when I was, 10. And I just, I made my year.
That's cool. It was something you've been wanting for months, if not years, I'm guessing.
Yeah. My big cousin had like every pair of Bally's that came out, and I just used to always, I was always in awe of his collection. So when I got my first pair, I thought I was it,
If you weren't living where you are now in New Orleans, I believe you're still in New Orleans, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where would you live?
Probably New York. Domestically, I'd be living in New York. I feel like I'm a New York guy trapped in New Orleans, but I had the opportunity to move a long time ago, and I should have. I kind of like that fast paced environment. But outside of that, probably an island somewhere.
Ireland in New York. Why no, Ireland?
Island. I'm sorry.
An island?
Yeah, some kind of tropical island.
Oh, island. Got ya. That makes more sense than New York and Ireland. You didn't sound like you were Irish. So. although Ireland would be a pretty cool place, actually.
I want to visit
there. Seems very cool. Nothing but love for all the Irish listeners. How much money in the bank is enough for you? Like if you had X amount in the bank, you could say, hey, that's good. I'm good. That's enough. What's that number?
10 million.
10 million. What do you love about business? About your business in particular?
What I love about business in general. I consider myself a problem solver. I love solving problems. I like not doing the same thing every day. So that's what I like about business in general. What I like about our business is just the fact that, I like that our products help so many women. And I like reading the comments and the emails from people who say, our product, changed their hair texture, solve some kind of problem that they were having with their hair, and they're just always so grateful And we have people that stop by our salon just when they're in the area, just to come in and thank us for creating the line. That's like the silver lining on everything.
And flip side of that, what do you hate the most about your business? So you could change one thing about your business, what would it be?
Lack of capital.
And then finally, who's one of the most interesting people you've met through ECF? It could be in person. It could be just someone in the forums who you've had an interaction with. It could be just someone, a top poster that you see their stuff and you're like, I really like that guy or gal, and they add a lot of value. Who would that, is someone come to mind in terms of someone that pops out at you as a really impressive ECF member?
Yeah, I haven't had a lot of interactions. I haven't really utilized the site as much as I wish I had. But Susan Hayes jumps out at me. She's just, she's just really well versed in a lot of different aspects, really opinionated, but in a good way. Yeah, that would be the first person that jumps out at me.
Nice. Yeah, Susan's fantastic. She's one of our longtime members, always adding really super valuable stuff. So Susan, if you're listening, thank you. Well, Darnell, I mean, man, thank you for coming on. This is cool hearing you've got such a fascinating story, and what you've managed to build despite some kind of setbacks early on is just super impressive, man. So, I mean, all the way from, the drawings to the cutting hair in the abandoned bathroom, that's such a stark visual for me, and such a cool thing to think through in terms of uniqueness to building what you've built today. Darnell, and you've got, of course, VIPHairCare.com, which we've been talking about, and that's the business. And over there, you guys create really great, like high-end salon quality natural hair care products, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So can you talk just a little bit about those and for people who might be interested?
Yeah, our products are developed for all hair types in all stages for all women. Like I said, my wife is the brains behind the actual products. We test everything out in our salon so we know it works. Our flagship product is actually a hair drop serum, a hair growth serum called Grow Healthy Hair Drops. We spell Grow, GREAUX. It's kind of a Cajun thing, but they actually work. I know there's a lot of different products on the market that claim to regrow hair, but ours actually do. And we have the reviews and the testimonials to prove it. Yeah, so we're proud of what we've created. We urge everybody, anyone having hair loss issues or just issues with their hair in general, to check us out.
Very cool. VIPHairCare.com. Darnell, so cool hearing your story. Thank you for coming on and talking. And I know when we were kind of talking earlier, it's there's been some tough parts, like you mentioned, and it's really respect that you came on and kind of shared some of those, because it can be hard to do. I hear from so many people, especially behind the scenes, like stuff that's going on. And yeah, it's a hard thing growing a business, and a lot of people don't talk about the struggles as much as they should. So yeah, just really appreciate you coming on and being so honest and forthright, man, and wish you the best, and so glad to have you in the community. It's been great having you there.
I really appreciate you having me. I really do. Hope I didn't do too bad.
No, you did great, man. Love the amazing story. So thanks for coming on.
All right, Andrew.
Thanks so much for listening. And the fact that you made it to the end of the episode tells me you're probably someone interested in this stuff and might be a really good fit for the e-commerce fuel community. Our community is the world's largest group of 7- and 8-figure e-commerce store owners and offers a value-packed form, dynamic live events, and much more. If that sounds interesting at all, you should learn about membership and how to apply at ecommercefuel.com. Big thank you to our two sponsors. Supercharge your email marketing efforts with Klaviyo, the world's best email and SMS marketing engine, at klaviyo.com/ECF. And also one-click upsell from Zipify Apps, where you can rapidly increase your average order value by offering powerful targeted upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Finally, thanks to Sherelle Torricampo for helping produce the show. Work hard, adventure often, and looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network, live from New York.